Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 97.9 The Wren. The wake-up call talks with the people in Charlottesville and Albemarle County who are making a difference. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for being here today. Today, our guest is Candace Schoner. She's the host of a podcast that's devoted to mental health issues. And the goal is to end the stigma of mental health, mental illness, while providing resources for symptom management and addiction recovery. You can find her podcast at Speaking Candidly with Candace. Candace Schoner, welcome to Sunday Morning Wake Up Call.
Thank you, Rick. I am delighted to be here, and thank you for that very nice introduction.
Well, I'm always interested in having folks on who spend a lot of time with a focus on topics that I think regularly only get their few minutes of attention unless it's because of something really negative in the news. And I'd like to take advantage of having someone as yourself to just go through some of the issues, some of the information, share some things that you've learned and background that you have when we're not staring down some really sad event that happened yesterday that finally has everyone looking at a mental health issue.
Well, I appreciate that, because as someone with a news background and working in broadcast journalism, you know, giving a story 30 seconds, 45 seconds, a minute 30 is certainly not enough attention on the crisis of mental health in America right now. So I am wide open. Ask me whatever questions you'd like, and I'll do my best to share the information that I have, that I've gained through my research and doing this podcast. I will state that I am not a mental health provider or professional, but I do have those as advisors on the podcast.
Well, let's start with, certainly I mentioned not having something that happened yesterday to finally turn our attention to mental health issues. But we have had something going on for many months, and what many people say will be a year or longer, with the COVID-19 virus. And I'd like to talk about that in terms of mental health issues. Are you ready?
I am ready. I think it's a perfect timing. COVID-19 or the pandemic has definitely altered our daily routines. Individuals are experiencing extra financial pressures. There's obviously social isolation. And all this has definitely impacted mental health in America. I've interviewed a number of professionals from various organizations, in particular the National Health America of Virginia. And since the pandemic, they have added, I don't know how many exact phone numbers now, but they've added additional phone lines to provide support. In fact, one phone line is called the COVID Support Warm Line. And I'm happy to give that phone number out if you'd like. And, you know, they've been cutting down staff because of budget cuts, yet they realize the calls have been increasing since COVID, so for the past 9 months. So they've got a couple of warm lines, one, as I said, specifically for COVID. And I don't know if the listeners know the difference between a warm line and an emergency line or a hotline. And it's pretty much what it sounds like. Is a warm line are calls that are answered where there's not a risk of somebody doing harm to somebody else or to themselves. The hotlines are more for the emergencies when someone might be considering or having suicidal thoughts.
Our guest today is Candace. Candace Schoner is the guest. She hosts a podcast related to mental health issues, and we're here to talk about mental health issues today. So, Candace, you're talking about the COVID-19, the COVID support warm line. Give us the number.
Okay, that is, hang on one second. I want to make sure I'm doing it accurately. It's 877-349-6428, which basically stands for 6428 MHAV, which is the National Health America Virginia. And that is support for people who, no surprisingly, are having trouble dealing with COVID. There's so much unknown, even after 9 months of information from the CDC and other sources about the pandemic. And, you know, it definitely increases everybody's stress, anxiety, fears. I mean, it's definitely adding to the mental health issues in America. I mean, I think you and I have talked about this before. I'm sure you probably know the statistic. 43 million Americans are dealing with mental health, and that was pre-COVID. And COVID comes around, and I think it's shaking even the most calm people, people who have not ever really experienced a lot of anxiety or depression in their lives. But I think everybody's been touched by it, especially because of the isolation. Isolation is like one of the worst things Americans can have, and it definitely impacts feelings of sadness and depression. I think we can all probably agree on that. And the unknown factor. I love the routine. We're all out of our routines from COVID. You know, I think it's a day-to-day struggle to figure out, you know, what is acceptable in terms of how we go about living our lives, and do we wear masks? Do we not wear masks? How much social distancing do we have? Is it safe to go inside a restaurant these days, even though, you know, we're in, what, stage three? We've lifted the requirements. I think restaurants are now able to have 50% capacity. I myself am not really comfortable. I don't know, Rick, are you comfortable going inside a restaurant? And I hate to say this because I'm an advocate for small business owners, and I love eating out. And I don't want anyone to continue to struggle financially that has a restaurant. But, you know, I will go patron a local restaurant, try to give money to the community, but I want to be seated outside because I still don't feel comfortable eating inside.
Let me turn it around for a second.
Sure.
We know that in terms of being a senior, having asthma, and we've started the conversation on how COVID-19 has impacted mental health issues in terms of stress. And you specifically mentioned isolation. Has it worked the other way?
The positives of COVID? Is that what we're talking about?
Well, there are certainly some people with mental health issues and concerns who would prefer to be in isolation. Am I correct?
Sure. I mean, depending on the diagnosis and that individual, a lot of people with mental illness do prefer to be by themselves. Whether that's healthy or not, I think most professionals would say it's not healthy. But I think the silver lining in terms of COVID is the creating the pods, the family connection. I think families are spending more time together indoors with each other. People are putting down technology, cell phones, to have more conversations with their family, maybe playing games. We know that being watching the news every day, listening to things on social media or reading social media is adding to the people's stresses and the anxieties. And so people are taking experts' advice about putting those devices down and trying to have just one-on-one conversation or picking up a hobby that people enjoy so that they get some distraction from all that's going on. And, you know, COVID is not the only thing that's adding to stress. We're in a presidential debate. I don't know if we should talk politics. It's your show, but that's also adding to a lot of people's anxiety when I talk to people.
Well, we'll get into that shortly, but do mental health issues impact your COVID decisions about whether or not I should eat at the restaurant, whether or not this is an appropriate time to put on my mask or an appropriate size group to be in?
Well, I can only talk from anecdotal perspectives from people that I've talked to. And a perfect example is two friends of mine who are a couple. They want to visit family. Actually, I've talked to a couple people about this. And depending on where they live also has an impact. If it's a high area of people that have contracted the disease, there's more fear of going to those places. Not only do you have just a decision about are you going to eat indoor restaurant or outside of a restaurant, it's traveling to the place. Where are you going to stay? That can be very anxiety producing. There's just so many factors that have changed. Basically, COVID's put our lives upside down and turned them around. And yeah, I think everybody is thinking about their choices and whether it's safe to go out. And you touched on it briefly before about the older or higher risk population, people with asthma, heart disease, just the elderly in general. I know a friend whose father passed away from COVID. He was an elderly gentleman and he had some other health conditions. And it was very stressful on my friend because she wanted to visit while he was doing okay, but not great. And of course, with some of the senior population and the facilities, there was the no visit rule. And I think that's also very stressful on everyone, is how do you connect or stay connected with a loved one when you can't visibly or physically be with them? And of course, now we've got Zoom meetings and the internet, which is a nice thing to have that kind of offset that. But, you know, physical touch, I don't know if you know this, but they say that I think it's 10 or 15 seconds of physical touch is very important to everyone's mental health. And those of us who live alone don't have that. And that's impacting mental health greatly. And that's because of COVID-19.
Again, our guest today is Candace Schoner. She hosts a podcast devoted to mental health issues. She speaks with specialists, experts, as well as guests who deal with their own mental health issues and awareness on Speaking Candidly with Candace. Tell me about whether or not children and teens and adults show signs differently.
I was basically going to say, again, not being a mental health expert, only doing my research and contacting others. Yes, of course they do differently. A lot of parents are afraid of telling their young children who may not understand exactly what this pandemic is about and the high risk. So I think awareness and education and how you talk with a young child, and I'm saying somebody like, you know, 8 years old, 6 to 8 years old, about the virus. I've talked to many therapists about children and how they're coping, and those who are doing therapy and what it's like for a child to go into therapy. You know, adults, we can verbalize what we're thinking and how we're feeling. We hopefully have learned that skill and can communicate it. Where a child, when they go into therapy, may not have those skills. So a lot of times, therapists, and you've seen this on TV shows, will have kids to draw out their feelings and emotions, and they'll talk to them while they're doing some sort of creative art project to try to then draw them out and get a sense of what they're thinking and feeling.
Is that the same with a teenager? Have you learned or heard people on your show, whether an expert or an individual speaking about their own issues, talk about what might happen in their might have happened in their family, whether if it's a teenager versus an adult?
In general, we haven't, you know, specifically gone into the COVID on a lot of our shows. You know, most of the topics deal with a variety of mental health issues.
We're going to take a break in a little bit, and we'll come back and talk about all the different types of mental health issues that are out there. Let me ask you real quick. We keep talking about your show, Speaking Candidly with Candace Schoner, who's our guest today, is the host of that show. What made you decide to do a podcast focused on mental health?
Well, I'll try to do it in a short summary, but it's kind of a long story.
We can go halfway through.
Okay. And I appreciate that because, as I've mentioned before, you know, I'm not a mental health professional, but I survived an early childhood with a alcoholic father and a mother that had pretty severe anxiety. I did not grow up with a voice. I was bullied. So within the household, I was not allowed to really talk about what was going on within our household. And my father was not a very happy alcoholic. He was more of a physically violent alcoholic. I was never physically abused, but there was a lot of screaming, yelling, hearing things being thrown in the house, and that created some trauma for me. As I've gotten older, I've experienced other things within my family. I have a niece who experienced a future husband who committed suicide or took his life by suicide. We're not supposed to say, you know, there's a way to say it correctly, which is death by suicide. And that was very traumatic on the entire family. So I, in the last couple of years, experienced some changes in my physical being, vision problems, as well as some neurological issues. And I've had to make a career change. So I have gone from being on a computer as a writer, designer, marketer, for most of my life, to figuring out how I can have a career, do something I'm passionate about, and use the skills that I have as a journalist. And I love talking to people, and I love sharing stories, and I want to make a difference. And I think we need to continue to talk about mental illness, and we need to keep raising awareness about it, and we got to work on ending that stigma, because people should not be silenced when they're going through trauma, depression, anxiety, whatever the case may be. They should feel comfortable talking about it. That is the first defense that we need to do, is we need to make people comfortable so they can talk about it, so we can reduce suicide.
Candace Schoner, Speaking Candidly with Candace, a show on mental health issues. Let's take our first break, and we'll be back in just a moment. All right. Rick Moore here, Sunday morning wake up call. As we talk about mental health issues, 43 million Americans struggling with mental health issues before COVID got in our lives back in mid-March, a little earlier for some on the West Coast. Candace Schoner here, host of a podcast devoted to mental health issues, Speaking Candidly with Candace. You can find that. Just use your Google. Candace, as we mentioned in the first part of the show, different types of mental health issues out there. Then you mentioned your father being an alcoholic. So let's start with addiction as one of these mental health issues that so many people struggle with.
That's absolutely one of the many issues involved with mental health. As a child of an alcoholic, which alcoholism is an addiction, it manifests in different ways. I interviewed a gentleman on my own podcast about his addiction, and he was addicted to both drugs and alcohol. It almost ruined his life. He has turned himself around. And through therapy, but also through medication. In the news now, we've got Dak Shepard. Are you familiar with Dak Shepard? I think the audience might be, an actor who just ended, he was so close to 17 years of sobriety, and he fell off the wagon. And most people who are addicted will fall off and resume their addictive behavior. I mean, that's just the fact. It can be, as in Dak Shepard's experience, it can be, I'm close to 17 years and something happens and they go back to bad behaviors. So it's really sad, and that's why they call it addiction, because it's every single day, or maybe even more like every hour, you have to be aware that you have an addictive personality, and you have to really maintain all the steps that you have used to stay, whether it's sober or off of drugs or even gambling, which is an addiction, and that can ruin lives. I haven't interviewed yet somebody with a gambling addiction, but I would certainly like to. I myself at an early age thought that I was having a problem. And luckily I recognized it and stopped cold turkey. So everybody deals with it differently. I am personally a fan of talk therapy, as are most therapists or psychologists. We need to be able to voice what's happening and share that information and find out what's the best course of treatment.
Let me ask you, so you mentioned Dak Shepard. For those who don't know, he was in the TV show Parenthood, correct?
Correct.
That's one of his more...
That's one of his, yeah, exactly.
More famous roles, anyway. And I don't want to tie everything to COVID, but it seems to have ingrained its spider web into everything in our current life. Have the number of addictions increased? Have people who were trying a majority or just a few who were handling things well fallen off?
From what I have heard, yes. We don't actually have the statistics, and you know how it takes forever to actually get numbers together. But let's face it, when people get stressed, particularly people that are addicted to drugs or alcohol or substance abuse, they're going to go back to what makes them comfortable, that helps them to avoid the reality, create their own reality. I found it interesting that the alcoholic beverage ABC stores were kept open at the beginning of COVID as a what's the word I'm looking for? I can't think of it. As a necessary business. That's not the word I'm looking for, but you know what I mean. And I think it's ironic because it provided the substances for people that are addicted to alcohol to get easy access to it. I mean, I understand that our states have to make rules and make decisions. Yeah, I think having that out openly when we know that the stress and anxiety is going to be so much harder on people, particularly those addicted to alcohol, to make it so readily available. I don't know. I mean, it's a, luckily I'm not in politics. That's all I'm going to say.
I think the word you wanted was essential business.
Thank you. That was, that's right. That's the word I was looking for.
The, how about, I mean, you're, it sounds like you're sort of based on something you mentioned earlier. What are your thoughts? You want to keep the local restaurants functioning as best you can. And at least in Virginia, the, our legislators changed some of the rules and allowed restaurants to send alcoholic beverages home, which was something that they never did before.
You know, I think our legislators and most politicians are trying to, it's a tight rope walk. I mean, it's hard to figure out how you can keep businesses staying open during the pandemic, and everybody needed to pivot. And they made those decisions. And, you know, the problem is with mental health in America, or if you have an addiction or any of these issues, is self-control. It's very hard to have that. And, you know, we're all responsible for the decisions that we make. And I think it's very important that family members, if you have people living together, that there's conversation about it and reminders, and that people have to, who are addicted, have to say, no, I'm not ordering wine or alcohol or whatever. Not everybody has an addiction to drugs or alcohol or whatever. You know, I myself like wine. I think there's a lot of people out there. We definitely have a great state for great wineries in Virginia. And I think it does help the local restaurants to put some money and pay their bills and hopefully keep people employed, because that's a huge part of the economy as well, is the employment factor. So, again, I'm glad I'm not in politics. I'm not glad I don't have to make these decisions, because they are really, really tough decisions.
Again, our guest today is Candace Schoner, talking about mental health issues, because she's the host of a podcast devoted to this topic, where she speaks with specialists, experts, and individuals who deal specifically with such things. Candace, we're talking about addiction. What are your thoughts on, you have group therapy, or I guess peer counseling, is that the proper word, for organizations and groups like Alcoholics Anonymous? Were they defined as groups that couldn't meet person to person, face to face, because they were too large early on in the COVID months?
I'm not exactly sure of your question. I can talk about peer counseling that I know is offered through, like, Mental Health America, Virginia, and other organizations.
Well, let me ask it this way. If I was suffering from alcoholism and I had my regular meeting at the local church, that was part of my routine, but there were anywhere from 15 to 25 people who showed up. Was that meeting struck down in April and May, et cetera, by the mandates from the Virginia governor?
Yep.
Because of the number of people who might be there? And if so, what did someone like myself, as an alcoholic, not really, do during that time?
Rick, that is a great question. Thank you for re-asking it in a way that I can understand and maybe respond to it. Yeah, I think that that was a really tough decision. You know, going by the mandates and the number of people that could be in one location at a single time, yes, it made it very difficult for people who do group therapy. And I'm going to put Alcoholics Anonymous as a group therapy because it's a group of people that meet together to discuss their mental health issue related to alcohol. I think what happened is, I know in those programs, there's usually a mentor with somebody else. So I would hope what happened was that people talked one-on-one or in smaller groups. I don't know for a fact that this is the case. I do think that it added to the addict's already difficult situation because those meetings are vitally important to recovery and staying recovered. You know, and again, I pointed out the fact that recovery is an hour-by-hour thing, and the meetings are really important. And I think anybody who makes policy had to make the best decisions that they could know with the information that they had at the time. And we did not have all the information about the virus back in April, or, I mean, even now we still don't completely understand everything about this virus. But I think they did not want people to be, quote, super spreaders and to reduce the risk to the masses. And I guess, you know, that was a decision that they made. And hopefully, if it prevented one death, that's great.
So let's talk about some of the other mental health problems that people can have. We discussed it briefly in the first part of the show. Let's talk about anxiety. I don't think that many people automatically list anxiety as a mental health issue. I think we've become used to addiction and even depression and some of the others that we'll get to, PTSD, but anxiety was one that you wanted to make sure that we talked about?
I did, and thanks again for that question. I think when it comes to mental health issues, one of the things that we probably should clarify is, and this is what the mental health professionals clarify, is that it's kind of defined in three ways: mild, moderate, and severe. So you need to recognize what's typical and what's not from a person's everyday living. Stress obviously is a normal psychological and physical reaction to everyday lives and what's demanded of us. And everyone reacts differently to different situations. And it's normal to feel stress and worry. However, when that fear or stress or worry escalates and continues on a day-to-day basis, for say a week or a month at a time, then we're really talking about more of a mental health issue rather than just the normal level of everyday anxiety. Hopefully that makes sense.
Yes, it does. But what are some things that are going to tell me which level my a family member or coworker or or neighbor, friend may be at?
Well, the short answer is, how does that anxiety affect that person's daily living? Are they not showering, not cleaning house? Are they not going to work? You know, what are the changes? And I think when we talk about mental health, we need to look at the way that the person has changed. And that's one of the ways that you can tell if a person has a more serious problem.
So by seeing someone whose life changes are significant, what do I do then? Do I approach them with conversation? Do I call the COVID support warm line, which in a moment we need to get that number out there again? What are my next steps? Do I push them out the door to go see someone for counseling?
Another great question. Most people with mental health issues, I wouldn't say most, I shouldn't say that, I can't classify, but in general, what I have heard from the people that I interview on my podcast, and they have mental health issues, they would like people to ask them, how are they doing? What they do not want is to be judged and for the people to dismiss how they are feeling. They don't want to be told, oh, you'll be better tomorrow. You'll feel better in an hour. Oh, this will pass. They generally need people to acknowledge that their feeling is real and it's important to them. It's never a bad idea if you think somebody is suicidal to remind them to contact somebody, whether, you know, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, which is 1-800-273-TALK, that they should call that number. Again, the purpose of my podcast, Speaking Candidly with Candace, is to really shine a light on this topic by sharing stories that can be related by others who are struggling.
Okay, let's take our next break, and we'll come back and continue speaking with Candace Schoner about mental health issues. Be right back. And here we are again, Candace Schoner with us today, talking about mental health issues. You can find her podcast, Speaking Candidly with Candace, out there on the internet. Candace, we were talking about anxiety, and you made mention of the COVID support warm line. 20 seconds, what's the difference between a warm and a hotline? And then give out that phone number again.
Okay, so a hotline is basically that. It's an emergency call. It's someone who may be having suicidal thoughts and need to talk to some expert in that field to determine what or where they need to be for their own safety and safety of others. The warm lines are for things like COVID support, temporary anxiety, depression, whatever the case may be. It's more of a temporary thing that people want to talk about. The COVID support warm line phone number is 1-877-349-6428. The 6428 stands for MHAV, as in the National Health America of Virginia, Mental Health America of Virginia.
All right.
And I do want to add, if I could just add one other thing on that, they do also have it, that warm line where you can text and get support as well. For those who don't want to talk and like texting, they've added that feature, which I think is tremendous.
Candace, we'll keep going through some of the other mental health issues that a variety of folks suffer and deal with. But I noticed today being October, middle October, that a short while ago, October 10th was World Mental Health Day. Can you tell me what happened? What happened and how it was honored?
Sure. Well, first of all, World Mental Health Day is an international day for global mental health education, awareness, and advocacy against social stigma. I don't know when it actually started. Oh, wait, I do remember now. It was first celebrated in 1992. However, in our local area, there was a, it was called the Shenandoah Valley Out of the Darkness Walk in Gypsy Hill Park in Stanton to basically fight suicide and raise funds for suicide prevention. And the walk has been held for a number of years. Usually the walk gets over 500 people. I don't think there was that many participants because of COVID this year, but it's certainly worth paying attention to, and hopefully next year they'll be able to have more walkers and raise more money to help fight suicide.
Very good. We have such mental health issues as depression or depressive disorder, which I think is one that many people are at least familiar hearing about, whether or not you understand it. Can you talk about that for a bit?
Oh, boy, that's a tough one, because I think, again, looking at overall mental health, we've got mild, moderate, severe depression. I think when we start to get concerned about depression, looking at a family member who may be depressed, I mean, we all have days where we're sad, depressed, maybe even a little angry, but they pass. Somebody with mental illness, that depression never goes away. I mean, I can't even imagine what it would be like to wake up every day depressed, not wanting to get dressed, take a shower, leave the house, go to work. I mean, this is severe depression. People call it the black cloud. I don't know why people get that depressed. I've known several people in my life who have gone to hospitals for the treatment of their severe depression because they have had suicidal thoughts and they needed intensive therapy. And it was tremendous for them. They learned some coping skills and how they could get beyond that black hole of depression. Obviously, there are medications out there available for people that have severe depression. And I'm not going to recommend any medications. People can talk to their either primary care physician or to a psychologist to find out what would be the right, I'm going to call it cocktail for them, because sometimes it's a mix of medications that will help. And I think all psychologists agree that talk therapy is a good place to start, because you've got to figure out the root of that depression, what's causing that depression, before you can move forward. And it does take steps. It's taking baby steps from everybody that I've talked to. You know, there are going to be some days that are bad, and it's okay to have a bad day or to have a bad week. But people with depression need to acknowledge and be positive about the times when they got out of bed. And even if they just went and took a shower and then went back to the couch, that's a step forward. And they just got to keep adding those steps forward to hopefully help with their depression. And again, I highly recommend people, if they're not ready to talk to a counselor or a therapist, find somebody, a friend, a family member to talk to, or go to a support group. And there are lots of them available online.
Again, our guest today is Candace Schoner. When we talk about mental health issues, Candace has a podcast whose goal is to end the stigma of mental illness while providing resources for symptom management and addiction recovery. Speaking Candidly with Candace is where she does this. Candace, we talk about depression or depressive disorder. Have any of your expert guests or guests who are dealing with this on a personal basis, they tell you how to get tested? I mean, that's one thing that I think people who don't understand is, how do you get, air quotes, tested for depression?
Well, number one, you have to be open to get tested. And I think what happens is we've got the stigma and people walk around with their depression and they don't tell people that they're depressed, which then leads to greater depression and the potential for suicidal thoughts. So that's number one, is recognizing it. And then basically they would need to go to a psychologist who can then evaluate them on their level of depression. I remember the first time I went to a therapist and I was in college, and a lot of college students do go through depression, anxiety, a lot of other issues. And I was not forthcoming and honest about why I was there in therapy, because I felt strange and I didn't know how to open up about my feelings. I felt like I had to keep them to myself. And it takes a while to get comfortable and find the right therapist. But when that happens, it makes a world of difference in people's lives.
Have there been any studies or any comments, again, from any of your guests, talking about whether or not virtual therapy or counseling is just as productive or better than face-to-face, in-office therapy?
It really depends on the individual person. I think what all the people that I have spoken to about would say, any type of counseling or talking, whether it's online, whether it's in-person, whether it's group therapy or individual therapy, is going to be beneficial. It's trying to get the person to talk about their feelings and emotions and feel the emotions. So, again, it's individualized. I myself have tried both individual counseling and group therapy. I did not really get much out of the group therapy. And as I joke, I say, well, because it wasn't all about me, right? I kind of wanted the attention on me. But a lot of people, and I'm hoping people who listen to my podcast, which they can get on Google Podcasts or Apple Podcasts or find on YouTube or online on my website, you know, find the hearing other people's stories, that it's going to resonate with them. They're going to find some nuggets in there that will help them to either get the help they need or to realize their own diagnosis, and that they want to be able to talk about it and share it and get better. I mean, that's the whole purpose of sharing real stories, real people with real problems. But I love the fact that my guests have are comfortable sharing their most difficult struggles with my listeners, with me, in the hopes of providing hope and healing for other people.
Well, Candace, can you tell me, what are some of the topics that you've covered with guests, whether experts or individuals telling their own personal stories?
Well, we've talked about the journey to sobriety with one of our guests. I think I mentioned this earlier. He is a recovering addict from both alcohol and drug abuse, and
right,
basically turned his life around and is now helping others. We've talked about early trauma. We've talked about sexual abuse. We've talked about, well, this isn't 100% in the mental health arena. It's about beating the odds of being stage 4 cancer. There's obviously a lot of emotional trauma that goes with beating cancer or living with stage 4 cancer. One of the early on, or actually the very first interview that I did on the podcast, I was so excited and thought it was a very interesting topic, where this author, Dodie Greer, she's the author of the book Touch, did a semi-autobiographical story about her life with a fear of being touched. So that is a fear of being touched with physical intimacy. Not even intimacy, just the act of touching. And it's a great book. I highly recommend it. It's called Touch by Dodie Greer. And she suffered her entire life with depression, anxiety, and this fear of being touched. And she has since moved past the fear of being touched and is living a great life. And I found her story to be very inspirational, as well as other guests on the show that I found very inspirational.
Fascinating. Again, Candace Schoner here with us today as we talk about mental illness issues. You know, one thing we haven't gotten into yet, we haven't spoken about PTSD. I think so many people associate it just with the military.
Correct.
Can you talk more about it?
I'm actually glad that you brought that up because, and you may know this already, I think it was yesterday or maybe the day before, that the Senate unanimously approved a bipartisan bill introduced by our Senator, Mark Warner, and John Boozman of Arkansas to help address the alarming rates of veteran suicides. And they have now earmarked $100 million to be set aside to expand veterans' access to mental health services. And as we know, PTSD is one of the mental health issues that we most associate, as you said, with veterans, along with depression, combat-related guilt for being survivors. So PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, can come from not just being in the military. I mean, in fact, you know, I was diagnosed with PTSD as a child of an alcoholic. I jump at loud noises because I lived with a raging alcoholic father. People that are sexually abused have PTSD. People that have been kidnapped. So there's a number of causes for PTSD. It doesn't mean that you just had to serve in military zones or war zones.
Are there, do you have any idea, are those sorts of mental health issues, are they suggested to be best worked through with expert therapists? Does peer counseling work?
I'm not that familiar, honestly, Rick, about what the best treatment is for PTSD. I think that is why Senator Warner came up with this bill and putting that $100 million into mental health services, because veterans and everybody needs access to mental health services, and PTSD is very, very difficult. I just watched a movie, people might know it. How was it called? Joe Ward. Oh, no, I can't think of the title. Joe's War. That's what it's called. Are you familiar with that movie? That deals with Joe was a veteran who was suffering from PTSD. And it shows you flashbacks, which most people who suffer from PTSD have flashbacks in their lives, especially veterans who have been to war. And it's very, very debilitating, and it really does need to be addressed. And we need more programs, not just for veterans, but for anybody that has PTSD. I know that there are programs out there that involve horse therapy for PTSD. I know that it helps when there is a purpose for people to do something, like maybe taking care of a horse or learning to ride, getting them to do something that reduces the time that they spend having those flashbacks. You know, it's sort of a distraction therapy.
Real quick, because we're down to just our last 2 minutes. Peer counseling versus time with your expert therapist. Peer counseling, tell me what's the difference.
Okay. So peer counseling, peer counselors are trained, by the way. They go through a certain number of hours depending on the organization for which they work for. So there is some training involved, but the people that are peer counselors have had experience with mental illness, whichever form it may be, whether it's depression or anxiety or PTSD. So they can relate to someone with that same mental health issue, which makes them a great counselor for someone, and they are trained to share their own personal experiences with that person that they are counseling. Professional and expert counselors, you know, we're talking about our psychiatrists and psychologists and social workers, different levels of training. And again, I think anybody who is struggling right now or has been struggling for their entire life with any of these mental health issues, to reach out and talk to somebody, whether it's a peer counselor, whether it's a friend, or whether it's a professional, they need to recognize that they have an issue. They can't solve it by themselves. They need to get some help.
Candace Schoner has taught me an awful lot today about mental health issues. Hopefully she's taught you a lot today too. You can learn more from her podcast. She invites experts and individuals telling their own stories to speaking candidly with Candace, rather than just her hour here. Candace, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, Rick, thank you very much. I appreciated the conversation, and I hope that the listeners out there learned something as well. And again, appreciate the opportunity to talk about the importance of mental health in America, and let's all work together to end the stigma. And well, as I like to say, every cloud has a silver lining.
Well, nice to meet new people every show. Thanks so much. Take care.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on Real Oldies 97.9 The Wren. The Wake-Up Call is produced by Dan Gould. Show archives can be found at cvillepodcast.com. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for The Wake-Up Call, only on 97.9 The Wren.